What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Lakers Outsiders podcast. I am Gary Kester, joining you on this fine Sunday evening. Football is not great for me and for Jacob, who is also on this podcast. So we're going to talk some Lakers basketball today because Lakers basketball was actually quite good. Jacob, I mentioned it was a bad day for football, but it was nice watching the Laker game, right?
LeBron James is a Laker. It's important to remember that. Today was glorious.
Some people forget that. also joining us today is Hani Amadian. Hani, you picked up another big win today on the on the Twitter account.
I think I want to, I was going to talk about the 3-0 Nevada Wolfpack, but instead I want to start out this podcast talking about the fact that our good friend Dylan Heiser basically begged us to tweet the Orlando Magic game on Saturday, thinking he was going to get to 500 on the season, and he lost. So, so he's going to be doing our end of the season punishment, basically.
Yeah. Listen, he's two games under 500. I'm not tweeting the rest of the year now. We're good. Let you guys have at it. I have a spotless record, and let's make Dylan tweet the Warriors game, all second night of back-to-backs, and any road game in Denver.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
Yeah, basically, I mean, Hani and I can tweet freely knowing that Dylan's going to finish the season 0-2 because he has been permanently retired from the Twitter account. We are here on Sunday night, might be Monday for those of you that listen to this on iTunes. But we're going to recap the weekend of games for the Lakers. They go 1-1 on the weekend trip, and kind of surprising for me that they won the game I was worried about and lost the game I wasn't overly worried about. So sometimes that's how it goes. But the Lakers lose in Orlando. We're going to talk about that one first before we talk about the bounce back win against the Heat today. Hani, it was a really rough game all around in Orlando. What was your main takeaway from that? Is it just kind of, ups and downs from a long season, or did it kind of bring some of the roots of problems with this team back to the surface temporarily?
It's a little bit of both. So I don't usually get worried about one game here and there for any season because it just doesn't make sense. It's an 82 game long season. Guys get tired. Even like that game, they had 2 days of rest, but even then, guys are tired. It's an afternoon game on the East Coast, which is, I think, the first time they've had one of those this year. So weird things are bound to happen. I do think, obviously, when you lose that big to a team like the Magic, who we should mention aren't a bad team. They're not a pushover. I think they're at 500 right now. They might have actually gone over 500 tonight.
The Magic are always really good to start the season, too.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And they have a lot of like talent. I don't think they're going to be a playoff team by any means, but they're a solid team and they're not pushovers. So in those instances, like I'm fine with the results. Like it's a loss, whatever, you chalk it up. But there are some issues that still kind of come out. And I think mainly it's the defense. Their defense has been so much better the last like 5 or 6 games, especially since Tyson Chandler came back, and it was even improving before, since Tyson Chandler got signed, and it was improving even before that. But like against Orlando, they gave up a ton of points. They weren't, at their best. And I think it kind of brings up this thing that we always have to know is that, yeah, they have two good centers, good defensive centers now. And that helps them erase a lot of mistakes. But if those two guys aren't at the top of their game, the perimeter defense is not great. They have probably 3 net positive perimeter defenders in Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, and KCP. And if any one of those guys isn't on top of their game, and which happens, then the whole defense can kind of go into shambles because everybody else isn't very good defensively, especially out on the perimeter.
Yeah, definitely. It was, it was a weird game because the Lakers, I felt like, got off to a really good start. And I was like, oh, okay, they came ready to play. They're going to, presumably take care of business against a team they probably should beat. But like you said, Hani, who knows how the season goes. The Magic have a tendency to kind of start the season red hot and then kind of, fade as the season goes on. But I mean, they definitely have talent on this team. I mean, they're it's young talent, and you know, I feel like they have a lot of potential, especially defensively, because of it seems like their thing is they're drafting athletes that have you know, great length defensively. You know, yeah. Guys like Jonathan Isaac or you know Mo Bamba. You know, and it feels kind of similar to Milwaukee. Milwaukee, it seemed like, was just gathering a lot of guys with a lot of length. And you know, athleticism and things like that, and wanted to really utilize that. And Orlando's kind of, I feel like, following a similar blueprint, and it caused the Lakers some problems. But Jacob, I mean, how much of that 130 to 117 loss that the Lakers suffered in Orlando do you think was just kind of due to maybe possibly just a bad matchup?
Well, I mean, you mentioned the length. I mean, I didn't watch the game live. I went back and begrudgingly watched it after. I didn't really pay much attention to the second and third quarter, but just about any time it seemed like they had somebody drive into the paint, there was like 7,000 arms, all that were about 10 feet long, just standing there straight up. So
that's physically impossible, but they are the Magic, so I guess.
Listen, I know what I saw. I did the math. I didn't have the rocket scientist check it, but
quick math.
I mean, I don't know necessarily that it was much to do with the matchup. I mean, I guess in a sense that it feels like Vucevic now is a new Laker killer. I still remember the dumb game winner he hit. fade away.
Those were in the tanking years, though, so really yeah. He helped us.
So, I don't know if it was a bad matchup. Maybe it was a cross-country flight. That's what LeBron said after the game tonight, that he thought the cross-country flight, the legs kind of caught up with him in the last three quarters. I don't know. You have games like that a couple times a year that it just doesn't really make any kind of sense, and you just kind of throw it out and move on. The problem is the Lakers have had two of those in the first 16 games now, with that and the Raptors game. So I don't know. I kind of, like Hani said, I don't really overreact to one game. I don't think anything happened in that game that was out of the ordinary. I mean, we've known the defense has been kind of hit and miss, and they were very missed that night. And then, I mean, the offense wasn't bad. It was, I mean, they put up 117 points. It was just Vucevic was hitting everything, and DJ Augustine looked like, I don't even know, looked like some all-star out there. So I didn't take a whole lot from it. It was just kind of one of those oddball games that happened.
Yeah, so two things for me with the Orlando game. The only thing that kind of I took away from that game that could be a concern is how the Lakers might defend stretch fives. Right, Vucevic just basically kind of got whatever he wanted in that game because he's able to step out to the three-point line and knock down shots or hit those long twos and kind of draw, you know, Tyson Chandler or JaVale McGee away from the basket. And that's kind of not really what they want to do. I mean, the Lakers would prefer them to be able to hang around the basket, as you know, in kind of drop coverage and be able to protect the rim. And with a guy like Vucevic, you can't really do that as much because if you leave him open, he can make you pay. And he certainly did that to the Lakers in a big way. He had 36 points, 13 rebounds, and he shot 15 for 23 overall, hit two of his five threes. Yeah, it was just a killer. And Jacob, you mentioned DJ Augustine had a great game. I mean, a lot of it just seemed like the Magic, even some of the contested shots, they were just going in. I was kind of surprised to see they were only 11 of 32 from the three-point line because it felt like they just kind of hit them in stretches where it just felt like their percentage was a lot higher than it was. They shot 54% for the game. So, I mean, the defense was problematic, but the one of the two takeaways, like I said, is stretch fives I feel like could be an issue for the Lakers just unless they go small with maybe a LeBron at center. That is one way to combat it. So yeah, it could be a bad matchup for that reason alone, just with the whole stretch five thing. But another thing is kind of like you guys said, it's an 82 game season. You're going to have games like that where it's just not your night. You know, you just don't play well. you know, sometimes there's really no way to explain it other than it's an 82 game season, and there's going to be games where you play exceptionally well and you get teams that have those nights themselves, and you know the Lakers are going to just dominate, and you're going to have those nights where the Lakers just don't have it and they get beat by a team that, you know, we all think that they should probably beat. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the same night the Warriors lost to the Dallas Mavericks. So, you know, not a lot of people expected that. And sometimes that just happens. It's a long season. These are professional basketball players. If you don't, you know, bring, you know, the effort, the intensity, the execution that you need, you can get beat on any given night. So, you know, I don't think it's anything too crazy to worry about. Like I said, the only concern I really had from that game was just the stretch five thing. That could be a problem. You know, we'll see. But it's still early, and I feel like not a lot of teams have that. No. They don't have a guy like Vucevic. It's like a true center that can actually step out and do the things that he can do. Usually to get that kind of thing, the teams have to go smaller, which the Lakers can do that pretty well too. So,
and they've done fine with it, like in the past, especially like Karl Anthony Towns is the one that comes to mind. He kind of cooked him for one half that last game against the Wolves, and then the second half they just shut him down. And a lot of that was Tyson Chandler. So, you know, there's adjustments to be made, obviously, but it is something to keep an eye on.
Right, for sure. And my thing with those types of performances is it's not the performances themselves. To me, it's how the team responds. And the Lakers had a quick turnaround. They went to Miami on Sunday. I want to say Sunday afternoon because it was such an early start time. It was a 3 p.m. Pacific start time. And yeah. So really quick turnaround for them. I mean, it's obviously a short trip, but they responded very, very well. And one person in particular that responded very well was LeBron James. He led the charge with 51 points. We saw him go off against Portland, and in this game, he took it really to another level. I mean, he was just dominant out there scoring the basketball and just kind of hitting some ridiculous shots, and it was pretty incredible to see. It, you know, like we've been talking about seeing like true LeBron performances, right, as a Laker, and we felt like that Portland game was the first time we saw that. Well, this was definitely the second time, and this was probably, I mean, his best game as a Laker. Honey, what were your thoughts just on not only LeBron's performance, but maybe some other things you saw from the guys and what was really, I mean, a dominant win wire to wire in Miami?
Yeah, couple things. One, I wish that in any other field you could be like a basketball player going to your previous employer's place of business and just cook them and trash talk the entire time, because that would be amazing. secondly, I think the most impressive thing about this game, outside of what LeBron did, because he's LeBron and we're used to it, even if it's a 50-point game, I think it was really good to see that they really weathered the storm really well. There were the fact that they were able to, one, lead wire to wire, and then in the second half, they never let the lead go down below double digits. There were times when the Heat were catching on fire. They were hitting a lot of threes. Dwayne Ellington, former Laker, was going off. But they were able to, like, basically every time that happened, they took a couple body blows and came back and pushed the lead back up. And that was the case with or without LeBron. Obviously, it helped a lot with LeBron on the court because he was a plus 20 on the night. But I think considering where they've been this year, where they've given up a lot of leads, they gave up a lead to the Mavs and they ended up winning. They gave a lead up to the Hawks and they ended up winning. But this one was a lot more comfortable throughout. And it was just kind of a full effort. It was, yes, LeBron was the only guy who really had it going offensively most of the time, but pretty much everybody was fine or even really good defensively. And I think that really helped them get a win in a second night of a back-to-back.
Yeah, I thought guys made contributions in different ways, which was nice to see. LeBron kind of handled the scoring load offensively. Ingram hit some timely buckets in the fourth quarter when Miami looked like they were starting to make a little push there down the stretch. He had one right at the end of the shot clock that I think was a little bit of a dagger and kind of a deflator to Miami. Really big bucket. Nice to see him, you know, put together a couple buckets there down the stretch. And, like you said, just guys, you know, just kind of made, you know, contributions here and there. And really, really nice to see. But Jacob, I mean, what are your thoughts on this game? I guess it's easy for a team, I think, when they get just destroyed kind of the way the Lakers did to Orlando, to kind of let that carry over and let it linger to the next game. What do you think it says about this team that they were able to just put it behind them? I mean, really within kind of a matter of hours and focus on Miami and go in and just dominate.
I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about KCP this podcast. When you talked about one guy shining bright, I thought it was KCP. I didn't really notice LeBron tonight.
It was Josh Hart and his plus 22.
Yeah, just well, like yeah, exactly. No, it says, I mean, it says a lot about this team because, I mean, that's kind of a playoff mentality or a playoff team mentality, I should say. Because if you let one loss linger, it becomes two, it becomes three, it becomes multiple losses. And you can't have that in the West with the playoff race as tight as it is. So, yeah, that was absolutely huge. I'm sure guys like LeBron and Chandler and Rondo, Lance, JaVale, some of the veterans on the team probably said something along those lines today during shoot around, during whatever meetings they had, that kind of like we were saying, that you just throw the Magic game away because you have a game tonight that you have to win. So yeah, I was really encouraged by them being able to come out and not just offensively, with obviously LeBron doing much of the heavy lifting, but defensively hold the Heat under 100 points as well. Heat had been playing pretty well of late, and really aside from Wayne Ellington just catching fire in the second half, the Heat really didn't put together much of a run for much of the game. They were able to kind of stay at bay. So, yeah, as you said, I was really encouraged by the way they were able to bounce back, and now they should still come out of the road trip with a winning record.
Yeah, we had talked about going into this road trip. I think that a successful road trip would be 2-1. Perfect. Obviously, it would be 3-0, and that'd be great. But I mean, winning on the road is hard. And I think we both looked at Orlando and Miami. Of course, Miami wasn't fully healthy in this game, but winning on the road against those two was not going to be, very easy. And who knows? I mean, if LeBron doesn't go off for 51, who knows how this game goes? But Jacob, I'm glad you brought up Kentavious Caldwell-Pope because I did actually want to talk about him, and we've talked about him on the pod before for this season, that his 3-point shooting is such a welcome addition to this team, and a team that, on any given night could definitely use 3-point shooting because it seems to kind of come and go with this group. And LeBron's improved 3-point shooting as of late has really, really helped. But Kentavious Caldwell-Pope tonight had 19 points in 28 minutes. He was only 4 of 11 from the field, but he was 3 of 5 from the 3-point line and shot 8 free throws. And some of that was thanks to some technical fouls. The Lakers were so good tonight, LeBron, I guess, specifically, that they got Josh Richardson to literally throw his shoe into the crowd and get tossed from the game. So that's always a good thing. And then I think Spoelstra got teed up after that, which gave KCP some free throws. But
after that, they were shooing to win the game. Sorry. Continue.
Who throws a shoe? I mean, honestly. But no, KCP has been really, really good. He's been scored in double figures in 5 straight games. And Hani, I guess, just what are your kind of your thoughts on the impact that his improved play has on this team?
That was a wonderful plug for a story I wrote on LakersOutsiders.com a couple of days ago. But no, honestly, like KCP is kind of a perfect fit, like a glue guy role player for any team, because he can play defense and he can hit through. I mean, he usually doesn't stray away from that. He's not trying to do too much. Mm-hmm. If he does, it's like attacking closeouts, and sometimes that doesn't always go as well as you would like. As you said, with his field goal percentage not being nearly as good as 3-point percentage tonight, but if his shot is falling. One, he's one of the few guys on this team that will take threes in transition, which, as it's the old school mentality is that, no, you should always get the layups because they're the better shots, et cetera. But the Lakers, like relative to the rest of the league, are not very efficient in transition offense, which, and you would be surprised to learn that, but that's, I think, a big part of that is because they don't really take threes at all. Most guys are not, you know, running to the corners, running to the wings. They're always filling the lanes. And not only does that mean less, fewer points, but it also means that you get kind of more crowded in the paint, and they'll end up missing some of those finishes. But he's one of those guys that will take those threes. He took one tonight that I was basically screaming no as he took it. It was a pull-up three from like 30 feet out, but he drained it, and I was like, all right. But like defensively as well, he was super active today. He was getting a bunch of deflections. I think he only ended up with one steal, but he had a handful of deflections, just pestering a bunch of the Heat's guards. And, you know, that's huge. He's not starting. I like this role he's in. And kudos to him for, like, he lost his starting job basically like two games into the season. And he was struggling for the first week, 2 weeks of the season shooting the ball. And he's really put it together basically all of November. I don't know if it's the headband or what, but he's been legitimately a really, really positive impact on the team for the past 3 weeks or so, two, 3 weeks.
The power of the headband.
Yeah.
Yeah. It works for LeBron too. I think two things, one of which Hani kind of touched on, that have been kind of difference makers for him. One, as you said, he was active defensively, which his offense, kind of how he plays offensively, dictates how active he is defensively. So that's big. It's always big for him to knock down shots. And really the last, more than even the last two games, I think, the last handful of games, he's shooting with more confidence. You mentioned, I mean, we can joke about the 30-foot three-pointer. He wouldn't have taken that four, five, six games ago. Yeah. So that's a big thing for him to get the confidence back. But, yeah, he's absolutely huge for this team because the team already lacks shooting, apparently by design. But even then they lack shooting, so having the one of the few good shooters they have back in rhythm is vital.
Yeah, if my math was correct, that I quickly did in my head, and excuse me if it's wrong, it's been a long day. The last five games, he's 11 of 25 from the three-point line, which is 44%. That is big. I mean, that's huge for the Lakers if they can get that kind of production from him offensively. And like you guys said, when he's hitting shots, he's super active defensively. And he had some, you know, he had some plays today where, you know, he got some deflections and stuff, but he also had some today where he just cut off dribble penetration. And that's such a big thing because I think with Orlando, the Orlando game, there was really nothing to deter their dribble penetration. They just kind of, especially DJ Augustine, it just seemed like he kind of got into the lane whenever he wanted, and that opened up so many things for him. And it was just a problem. It was a problem for the Lakers, and KCP is definitely a guy that can help prevent some of that. And he's, you know, if he's hitting threes, I mean, he's, you know, a true 3-and-D guy, you know, when he's hitting those shots. And, you know, that's really, really big. As far as the 30-foot three-point shot thing goes, I mean, I don't know if that's exclusive to Clutch Sports members or what, because LeBron is pretty good at those too. But it was almost, I guess tonight was a little surprising to me. I kind of thought that they would come out and they would perform better. I didn't think that they would dominate from start to finish the way they did.
Yeah.
But then again, when you have the best player in the world on your team, it kind of helps. So very, very nice to see Lakers get the win and move to 9-7 on the year, which everybody's kind of highlighted. If you haven't seen it already, the every time LeBron has changed teams, his team has started 9-7, I believe, on all three teams. The first two times that his teams went to the NBA Finals, they lost, but they got there. And so maybe the Lakers can do that too. That'd be fun. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see because, I mean, the Lakers started 2-5, and now they're 9-7 on the season with a very winnable game coming up on Wednesday at Cleveland. And we're going to talk about that here to wrap this thing up. LeBron, it's kind of weird how the schedule played out. He gets kind of two, like, return games, I guess. He's returned to Miami since He left the Heat to go back to the Cavs and now on to the Lakers. But that was actually, I think they said on the broadcast, that was the first time he's won at Miami since he left the Heat, which is
crazy.
Which is interesting, yeah, because the Cavs have been really good with him, and you know they typically play there twice a year. So he finally gets a win in Miami since he left there. Jacob, I'll throw it to you first, though. How do you think the Cavs fans are gonna how receptive to LeBron do you think that they're gonna be this time around? Because obviously, when he returned last time as a member of the Heat, there was a lot of bitterness and a lot of kind of sour feelings. This time should be a lot different, though, right?
You would think so. I mean, he did what he promised him he would do and gave him a title.
Because the Warriors blew a what was the lead? Was it 3-1?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not like they had a unanimous MVP on the team or anything.
Yeah, right? 73-9. Or I mean, people forget that stuff.
and I mean, we joke, but those circumstances are why he, I assume, is going to get cheered loudly on Wednesday.
If they don't, they got to move the Cavs to Seattle like immediately. Like the next game, they got to play it in Seattle.
100% in favor. Because, yeah, he did what he was supposed to, or not supposed to, but did what he was promised to. Mm-hmm. It'd be very silly, very petty, whatever you want to say to boo him. Like, I think he'll get a warm reception when they start. Now, after kind of the initial introduction, if you just want to boo him because he's a Laker, that's fine. But he should get a very loud standing ovation when he's introduced in the starting lineup Wednesday.
Yeah, I mean, he might just get another cheers because who knows? A lot of those Cavs fans might just be Laker fans now. So
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, we joke, but yeah. And especially as the Cavs are terrible. There are going to be a lot of Laker fans in the building, including Dylan. So he won't be tweeting. Should be a win.
If they lose because he's in the building, he is literally fired. Hani, do you expect LeBron to be very, very aggressive like we saw tonight and try and have a big performance in his return to the Cavs?
I hope so. I think it'll be really fun if he, tried to go. Because the first half especially, LeBron was the most aggressive, like, scoring LeBron I've ever seen. I think he ended the first half with, like, one rebound, one assist because he was only interested in shooting and making every shot. So it'd be really fun if he was putting on a show in Cleveland for the fans that obviously love him, as they should. And hopefully pointing at Dan Gilbert in the crowd a little bit. Maybe I don't know how you would do a Comic Sans celebration in the middle of a basketball game, but I think he should do it. Regardless of all that, I think he's going to be really excited to go and play back in Cleveland. He's one of the few NBA stars who is very invested in his hometown of Akron. He's mm-hmm. obviously with the new school that he created there and all the other charity work that he does there. I think it means a lot to him to go and put on a show in Cleveland.
Yeah. And, I think it would mean a lot to him, you know, for his teammates, to kind of take it upon themselves to really try and get him a win. Yeah. In his return to Cleveland, it's going to probably be a little, I would imagine, Jacob, it's going to be a little emotional for him, right?
Probably not quite as much as the last time. He's already left before come back. And last time he was the villain. I remember watching that game when he came back with the Heat and like genuinely thinking people were going to just like injure him because they were so charged up and so angry. And that game was so emotional. I certainly don't think it'll be anything like that Wednesday, but I said this before, or when I wrote the preview for today's game on this other site that won't be named, when LeBron gets in these games like this, he's more engaged just kind of by default almost.
Yeah.
And I had said that we would probably get a much better version of LeBron for Sunday's game against the Heat than the one that played in Orlando. And I think it'll be kind of the same thing. We presumably will get a version of LeBron that is engaged and wants to put on a show. And we've seen a couple times now what that version of LeBron looks like. So I don't know that it'll be emotional, but I know that he'll be kind of engaged and involved in the game, unlike other times this year.
Yeah, the only reason I think it could be somewhat emotional, not like overly emotional, is just I think this time I'd be shocked if the Cavs fans in the building are not appreciative of what he's done for them. I mean, the guy ended a, what was it, a 52-year title drought for the city of Cleveland. I mean, look at what the Browns do year after year after year. Like LeBron, you know, went in there and instantly made the Cavs, you know, a very respectable franchise and, like, you know, in the playoffs year after year, in the hunt as a title contender, and finally got it done, you know, in probably the most improbable scenario. I mean, literally the only team we've ever seen come back from a 3-1 deficit in the NBA Finals. And, you know, you could just, I mean, that moment was just, it gave me chills. Like, as somebody that didn't have a rooting interest in that NBA Finals, I mean, it gave me chills just to see the emotion, you know, and how hard it was for them to accomplish that. And, you know, I mean, he basically just kind of collapsed on the court, you know, and I think just kind of soaked it all in, and it just kind of all hit him at once. So I think there could be some emotion because, you know, this time he's returning knowing he gave them a championship and they accomplished that together. And if Cavs fans are not, like, you know, if they don't cheer for him in the building, I mean, I will tell Dylan to go around and just start kicking people in the shins because you never deserved him if you can't appreciate the guy, you know, for doing what he did for that organization. So, and especially what he's done for that community, you know, I mean, he still continues to contribute to that community and that, you know, his hometown, his home state and all that stuff. So, the guy's amazing. The guy's amazing on and off the court. And, hopefully, you know, Cavs fans give him quite the tribute, and I would think they will. I would think they will. So, but
one last thing for my favorite stat of the night, which I meant to mention before we jump to the Cavs game. Players in their 16th season or more to score 50 points in an NBA game. LeBron James tonight, Kobe Bryant in his finale.
Wow. That's pretty incredible. And the Heat threw a double team at him to prevent it, and he still hit a 30-footer.
Somebody, my other favorite comment was, Kyrie, eat your heart out. Because I guess the rules are if you go and double team him, then he's allowed to shoot. It's fair game. I was fine with it. Or if you shoot from, you know, 40 feet.
They already threw a shoe in the crowd, so I don't think they were going to throw a ball in the crowd, too.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. I mean, anytime the Lakers can win and an opponent throws their shoe and then gets tossed, I mean, that sounds like a good time.
Shout out to Ronnie Price.
No shout out to Ronnie Price.
That we can go down a deep, dark black hole when it comes to that. Let's just avoid that. Let's end this on a high note. The Lakers got a good win in Miami, and now they travel to Cleveland for a showdown with the Cavs on Wednesday. A couple of former Lakers. And a 2-win Cavs team. So if the Lakers lose that game, yeah, this stay off of Lakers Twitter if they lose that game.
I often do.
It was a lot more calm after this game. I don't know why. It was weird.
Surprising.
It's almost like you shouldn't overreact on the game to game. Anybody basis.
Complaining about Lonzo not playing in the fourth quarter?
Winning solves everything.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this time. If you like the podcast, as always, you can subscribe to us on YouTube, iTunes, and on Podbean. And if you subscribe to us on iTunes, please leave us a review. Leave us some feedback on things you like, things you don't like, things you want us to do better. We always appreciate the feedback, and those reviews really, really help us out. So we would appreciate that. And you get to choose Dylan's punishment at the end of the season, since it's pretty much determined that Dylan's going to be the one that's punished for being 0-2 on the tweets so far this year. And so, yeah, you can leave that in an iTunes review. And we just – I mean, I feel like at this point, since we already know who it's going to be, we might as well just take all the punishments and make him do every single one of them.
It's not the worst idea.
I was thinking we could just start tailoring the punishments to him. Like he has to wear like a Michigan shirt all day. Or
oh man, who even like makes that. These polls, right?
Exactly.
Have him read tweets that read mean tweets on the air, but instead of mean tweets, they're just tweets that make him mad.
100% that. I'm gonna start compiling them now.
Yeah. So we got some stuff cooking up for Dylan, and you can contribute to that. Leave it an iTunes review, and you're going to see Dylan go through a really, really difficult time in his life. So, yeah, and as always, you can find all of our content on LakersOutsiders.com. Follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. All that fun stuff. And unfortunately, we're not going to do trivia tonight, so Hani is safe. He won't have to try and guess where the Lakers played college basketball. That was on our latest pod before this one. So if you want to see that, I highly recommend it. It's at the end of the podcast. I'll even, you know, give you that so you can skip ahead. It was great. Hani was 1 for 5, and
I did very well.
I'll give him one tonight. Hani, where did LeBron James go to college?
We already did this at the end of the
one. All right. Well, okay. Where'd he go to high school?
I don't even remember. Actually, where LeBron would have gone to college if he ever played? The 3-0 Nevada Wolfpack.
No, he would not have. Nobody, he was not going to go there. All right, we're done. We're finishing this thing up. So yeah, go subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, iTunes, and Podbean, and leave us a review. Leave us a review, and we'll see you guys on Wednesday. Hopefully, talking about the Lakers getting their 10th win of the season and against the Cavs. I hope so. If not, it's going to be a very very animated podcast. But this was fun, boys. Another weekend of Laker game in the books. Laker games in the books. Another big win on the road. Things are looking up. So until Wednesday, for Jacob Rude and Hani Amadian, I am Gary Kester signing off.
Shout out Wayne Ellington.